Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
Is it time to change your approach and switch to Air Supra, albuterol budesonide? Now you can virtually connect with a doctor to discuss your options and see if it's time to make a change. If appropriate, you may even be able to get a prescription for Air Supra the same day. Talk to a doctor today and see if Air Supra is right for you. Visit airsupraconnect.com to connect with a provider.
Hello guys and welcome back to the Last Word on Spurs, our Christmas special. What a show we have in store for you. First up, I'm joined by Jason McGovern bringing season's greetings. Jace, how are you?
Well, it was season's greetings until I found out the subject of tonight's show. So, wishing everyone, obviously, hopefully you've all had a good Christmas and the presents are nicely opened. You've all got a copy of the Spurs shirt and we're ready to fly and looking forward to Boxing Day and everything, mate.
There you go. So many games to come over the Christmas period. Now, we're bringing back a very special guest on this show. We've had him on quite a few times over the summer, the build-up to January transfer windows. One of the most credible, I want to say, journalists out there, the assistant news editor of Sky Sports News, returning back to the show in Lyle Thomas. Lyle, how you keeping?
Good. Very good, mate. Yeah. Preparing for January, getting everything sorted out and getting to know what the clubs are doing at the moment. So it's all hands to the phone, so to speak, at the moment. And there'll be less Christmas turkey for me and more gabbering on the phone with people. So yeah, but that's how we like it.
Well done, Jason. Loves this time of year. Transfer window time's his favourite. He absolutely adores it. He tries to play this out there. He doesn't like it, but believe me, listeners, Lyle, he absolutely adores it. He's telling me, get Lyle back, get Lyle back. We've got Lyle on. So let's get straight into the show.
Hold on, Rick. I don't mind Lyle being on. It's you being on, I object to. When you talk about transfers for the last 4 months.
Well, now we've got a whole hour to look forward to
it
again.
It never
Jace.
Goes away. It never stops.
Oh, dear. Go on.
Transfer world never stops. Lyle, we are recording this show on the day of Jose Mourinho being sacked by Manchester United. Still feels strange saying that. You know, it's been, I presume, a crazy, crazy day for yourself. And the main topic to come out of this, obviously, is our manager, Maurizio Pochettino, who we adore at Spurs, we love him. He is one of the main favourites already for the job. What can you tell us in terms of him being a potential target for Manchester United? I'm hoping you're going to shut that down. What can you tell us about that?
I don't know if I can shut it down. I mean, listen, yeah, well, it has been a hectic day, obviously. I don't think a lot of people expected it, Jose, to go today, of all days. Certainly, it caught us by surprise, and I think it caught most of the media by surprise when it was. I mean, there certainly wasn't any reports overnight, from what I can tell, that it was going to happen. In fact, there was reports in various newspapers this morning saying that he's still, you know, he was still going to be kind of given a stay of execution, as it were. And then all of a sudden, the news came through this morning, and it was all hands to the pump, so to speak, at Sky. I can certainly say it's definitely an enjoyable experience to be part of the team and working at Sky on a day like today, because you really kind of get a sense of the whole operation kind of coming to life and clicking into gear with a news story like that. You know, it takes a lot of work, a lot of hard work from a lot of people to get that all together, you know, to get all the reaction, to get the you know, people like Gary Neville and Gary Emshoon, things like that, to be ready to come on and talk and obviously find out what's going on with a developing story like that, because things are kind of changing all the time. So it has been a hectic day, yes, obviously. And, you know, obviously Mauricio's name has been mentioned. Listen, I think Mauricio's name's being mentioned because obviously if you're Manchester United, you're going to be looking around all of Europe for who are the top managers, you know, who's going to come in and be a long-term acquisition for them. And Mauricio Pochettino is going to be on that list of names, isn't he? He just has to be. And you know, I'm sure he and anybody else would say that's a kind of a testament really to the work and the job he's done at Tottenham, and the job of the whole team at Tottenham, and how successful Tottenham have been under him. So, you know, listen, I can't shut it down, because he's obviously going to be of interest to Manchester United. I think that's just a given. You know, whether that interest is reciprocated by him and his staff, I don't know. But he certainly said today that he was committed to Spurs and fully focused on Spurs. And, you know, obviously, on the one hand, I guess he has to say that. But on the other hand, you know, he did say that at the end of the day. So certainly I don't think there's any danger in the short term. I think obviously what Manchester United are planning to do is bring in an interim guy to the end of the season and really take some time to make the right appointment. And I think that in terms of making the right appointment, that goes for a technical director as well. So I think what United are doing is looking at the whole way the whole club is set up, and looking at the failures, so to speak, of what's happened over the last few years, of how they've been left behind by the likes of City and Liverpool and Tottenham and other clubs in the European competitions, and thinking about how they can catch up with the rest of the pack. And I think they're looking at the models of different clubs around Europe, and the kind of the trendy model these days is to have the sporting director or the technical director, whatever you want to call him, working with a head coach, and having somebody above the manager who is an expert at the technical side, what we call the technical side, which is the football side of the club. So rather than the business side, rather than the commercial aspects and all that kind of thing, it's looking after the actual football side. So it's looking after who the head coach is, who his staff are, how they recruit players, how they recruit other staff, how they bring players through the academy. You know, those kind of pathways, and making sure they create the environment for players to thrive. So I think that's what United are going to be looking to do. I mean, we reported, I think, quite a few months ago, actually, that United had started the process of looking for a technical director. And the information that one of my colleagues was getting today from them is that Mourinho wasn't really into that. And that was part of the reason why they've made the decision that they have. So I think that what they're going to be looking for, as much as they're going to be looking for a new manager or head coach, whatever title they give to him, they're also going to be looking for the kind of the perfect partner, I guess, the perfect duo with a technical director higher up. So you know, who that's going to be is as important, I think, as who the head coach is going to be. So any head coach that's potentially going to be interested in going there will, I'm sure, we'll want to know who that person is going to be and have some kind of a say in perhaps who that person is going to be, so that the United can get it right. So that's kind of where things are at really at the moment in terms of United and any interest in Pochettino. It's not really something for now, but whether it's something that picks up pace in the summer or towards the summer, then that remains to be seen.
Okay, thanks for that, Lyle. Bringing it round to you, Jace. You know, this is obviously the first reaction to it. We are recording again, as I say, guys, on the day of Jose Mourinho being sacked. Therefore, when this show does go live, circumstances may have slightly changed in terms of where that story is at with Manchester United. But just to bring it on to Pochettino, Jace, for a second, his comments that he made ahead of the Arsenal Carabao Cup fixture when asked about the Manchester United link. He says, after nearly 5 years, there's a lot of rumours about my position here. I can't answer this type of question because this type of rumour happens. It's not my business what happens in another club. I'm so focused on delivering my best job in this club. Referring to, obviously, as Tottenham. Jace, what's your initial reaction to the sacking of Jose Mourinho? And are you confident that if a proposal was put towards Maurizio, he would still want to stay as Spurs and finish what I think said to you off air as the unfinished job? I mean, there's so much left for him to do at Tottenham, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm not in the least bit fussed about it at all. Not in the least bit fussed. I totally expect Manchester United to come for him or to be speaking to, you know, trying everything they can in their power to get him. He is the perfect Manchester United manager. He ticks absolutely everything that they seemingly want the next person to be. So, you know, I expect 6 months of every single week his name being on the back of every single newspaper. But I'm totally confident that he won't go to Manchester United. So, you know, but if he comes out and says, I'm not interested in going to Manchester United, you're a fool if you think the journalist a week later isn't going to say to him, do you fancy the Manchester United job? It's going to continuously. And he's right. I mean, he can deny it in 55 different ways, but he'll still get asked the question for the 56th time. So we're just going to have to get used to it. I think, of course, we'd think he'd be crazy to go there because we're Tottenham fans and that's a different club. So, of course, we want him to stay. But I think when you're so close to getting things or you're well down the path to getting things how you want them to be at Tottenham, why rip that up? And because when he goes to Manchester United, you're starting completely from scratch again. You know, Manchester United is not the club that it was when Fergie left. So, you know, you've got a complete rebuilding to start again, even if that's with a technical director or whatever. And you know, I don't see the attraction in that. And there's no more chance of that working this time because he's just seen three other managers sacked by Man United, and they all went with the hopes and optimisms of this is the best club in England, the finest club, and everything's going to be brilliant, and this is the pinnacle of my career. But it hasn't worked out for any of them.
Mm. I mean, just on my personal view of it, for me, I said to Jace off here, I would see it now to walk away from Spurs at this point in time, I would see it as though it's been unfinished business for him. You know, the way he has nurtured and developed this squad, and it's taken them right to the brink now. We are so, so close. To kind of go now, it would just, you know, and another man comes in, Jason, takes the credit for it. Imagine if another person does come in and win the league at Spurs. That's a lot of his hard work, Jace.
No, exactly. And, you know, when you exactly that. If somebody else came and won a league within a year, then, you know, it would have been done on the back of Pochettino's of work. The only club I've ever feared coming in from is Paris, because he's hinted that Paris would be a difficult choice
PSG,
to
you refer to, Jace,
because
PSG.
Of his links, yeah, yep. Because of his links there, and they've obviously got the spending power to help. But without it being Paris, I'm honest, it's really strange. The two clubs I've never worried about coming in for him are Man United and Real Madrid, and they're the two jobs he gets linked with.
Lyle, can I ask, coming back around to you for a second, because you mentioned about a technical director potentially as part of that setup at United, the way they'll move forward. As says Jace, it's a case of where, I mean, he just mentioned it there, it would be a whole restructuring job again for Pochettino, where he's taken Spurs down the line where they are now. They're kind of geared, set, ready to win trophies. With United, with all the egos there, with having to restructure that whole club, he's having to, you know, probably, you know, heal so many rifts within that football club. It's almost kind of going back to start, isn't it? It's kind of resetting himself to go back into a football club and kind of restructure it all again.
Yeah, well, sorry, excuse me. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, in terms of the technical director job, I think, the worry would be if somebody like Paul Mitchell went in there, because obviously Paul has worked with Mauricio before, and they trust each other a lot, and they're close and have been since Southampton's time, and Paul's name has been linked with the United technical director job. Obviously, he's at RB Leipzig at the moment, and done a good job there in terms of recruitment. So, you know, if he was to go in a Man United, that might be a bit more of a worry. But again, there's so many other technical directors out there, or that kind of a role. You know, people like Monchi at Roma and those guys that have done, you know, a really good job that I'm sure United would be looking at. But you're right, it would be a restructuring job. I dare I say though, Mauricio, he kind of likes that, doesn't he? Like he likes project. And that's what he liked about Tottenham. Tottenham was a long-term project, and that was part of the attraction, was to sit down and be part of a project going forward and building something. And but he's still doing that at Tottenham, very much so. And, you know, like you said, it's unfinished business is definitely the word. And, you know, I think it's important to remember that he apparently turned down Real Madrid in the summer before he signed that contract at Spurs. So this is a guy who's not afraid to turn down a big club if it's if the conditions aren't right, and you know, it's not the right time, and he doesn't want to move, and he feels like he's still got unfinished business at Tottenham. So he certainly has proved that he's not afraid to turn down huge jobs, and he's still a young manager as well. There's still plenty of time on his side. This is a guy who's going to be around for a long time in the game. He's certainly proven that he's not a flash in the pan. You know, that he's not a manager who is, shall we say, needs to thrive on his stock being at a certain level. You know, he's proved that he can produce a winning, successful team year after year after year, even without signing any new players, even without any, you know, going into the transfer market, even with a raft of injuries, even with a team that half of them have only had half a pre-season and played in the World Cup. You know, all these hurdles that would get in the way of most teams and cause most teams to have a blip and slip down the table, you know, Pochettino's Tottenham have overcome all of them. I know everybody talks about the fact that they haven't overcome supposedly that final hurdle yet and won a trophy, and obviously Pochettino is an ambitious guy and he's going to want to do that, but I think time is very much on his side. And listen, Tottenham have been and Pochettino has been the subject of speculation over his job for what, the best part of 3 years, 4 years during his 5 years.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, definitely.
And he's still there, isn't he? You know, 5 years later, he's still there. So, you know, initially you look at it and you think, well, okay, the United job's available again, and that might be a concern. But you know, on the other hand, we've had this kind of speculation around before. We've had this conjecture about Mauricio moving to club A, B or C, and he's still there and he's still at Tottenham and still doing what he's doing. So yeah, you know, like I said, I don't think it's a worry in the short term, and I'm sure, like I said, Tottenham have survived the press and the media speculation around Pochettino before, so there's no reason why they can't survive that again this season.
Fingers crossed. Lars, sticking with you, if we go back to the final game of last season against Leicester City, the post-match press conference, Pochettino called on the club to be brave, take risks and work in a different way to what they had been previously. I think at the time, and you know, you correct me if you think I'm wrong here, I think that was widely interpreted as a plea for Chairman Daniel Levy to release the financial shackles. As fans, you think we was right to see it like that? Is that how you personally saw it at the time when he gave that post-match press conference against Leicester on the final day of the season, when it's right inside at that point in time, a new contract between him and the club wasn't agreed?
I think for the most part, there was a lot of presumptions made that's what it meant, that he wanted to have the financial shackles released, but that's not the way that I really saw it. I think, and also that's not the version, shall we say, that I got from people I speak to. Certainly not. You know, I mean, I think firstly, it's not necessarily true to say that Pochettino suddenly wants to work with, you know, big money stars and be competing for the 60, 70 million pound, 80 million pound players that Man United and Manchester City and Chelsea do. You know, I think Mauricio prefers to sign up and coming players, you know, players that are kind of emerging talents that he can, preferably young and ambitious, that he can nurture and mould in his image and turn them into those sorts of marquee players that are worth, you know, 50, 60, 70 million pounds. You know, that's certainly the model that Tottenham have adopted over the years and that he's bought into. So I think the idea that he suddenly wanted something different in that regard, I just don't see it. And like I said, that's not the version I was getting from my sources. So I think, you know, the model as well has been successful that they've built. You know, they've had a negative net spend. I think Mauricio's known that they're building a stadium and the costs that it's incurred. So I don't think he's been under any illusions that suddenly there would be massive transfer funds to be available. So yeah, you know, what did he mean by being brave, taking risks? It could be any number of things. You know, it could be small things. I mean, you know, there was the wider context of what he was saying there, and you know, he I don't think necessarily he was meaning it as strongly perhaps as it was taken. So you know, it could be for them to be a little bit more brave on signing particular targets perhaps that they were not quite sure of, you know, that perhaps that, you know, were not as proven yet, or perhaps taking, you know, the gamble on in that regard, or taking this more of a gamble perhaps on a few more 5-6 million here and there, you know, on a player earlier in the window. You know, he's already said that he would rather bring players in earlier in the window, so he has them for pre-season. You know, perhaps we saw a little bit of that playing out with Grealish. You know, obviously the opportunity was there early on for Tottenham to do something while they were between ownership, and you know, they waited and it proved to be, you know, impossible to get him in the end of the window. So perhaps he meant that. But listen, you know, Pochettino signed a new contract, and if he didn't agree with the terms, you know, the basis of signing that contract, then he just wouldn't have done it, would he? So, you know, to say that he was frustrated, you know, not competing with Chelsea or Arsenal or Manchester City for these huge marquee players from abroad and what have you, then I just don't see it. But also I think it's important to point out that Spurs have, you know, released the funds in one respect, because they've given big contracts to their current stars. So maybe when he said be brave, maybe he meant, you know, moving the pay structure up a little bit and giving the current stars that he has the money to that, from their point of view as players, they're competing with the best stars in terms of their wages. Perhaps he meant that, but I don't think anybody really knows for sure exactly what he meant.
I don't think there have been any broken promises. I don't think he was told that huge funds would suddenly be released if he was going to sign a new contract or whatever, and he did, so he must have been happy with the conditions, otherwise he wouldn't have signed it.
Yeah, and come around to you, Jace, you know, just on this subject, because, you know, we're on Twitter and we're on the Love Sport shows, we get all the phone calls saying, you know, release the money for Poch needs to spend the money. You always make that valid point, Jace, that, you know, sometimes maybe, like Lowell says there, he doesn't want to spend the money, maybe he doesn't want to have to manage an ego. We've always questioned about Pochettino, that could he manage someone like, you know, a Sergio Ramos, someone that is not going to go for him on everything that he wants. There will be a bit of resistance there in the dressing room, Jace.
Yeah, and you know, you can even apply that to today, can't you, where it's being seen as Mourinho up against Paul Pogba, and will Manchester United back the player or back the manager? And you know, it's now suggested they came down very firmly on the side of the player, because he's too valuable an asset. So Pogba's ego thinks, well, I've seen one manager off, and then the next manager that they seemingly want is one that doesn't like players with an ego that will take him on. So, you know, it's things like that. I think, you know, if I've always said, I want Pochettino to sign the players that he wants, and I don't care what the name is. We saw in the summer when players like Shaqiri were, for instance, linked, and fans are, oh, why do we want a player like that? He won't take us to the next level. And those same fans that said it then are tweeting on Sunday, why didn't we sign Shaqiri? That's the way. Andrew Robertson's another one who looks, let's be fair, he looks the best left-back in the league. Harry Maguire, why do we want a failed centre-half from Hull? Plays in the World Cup, why don't we try and sign Harry Maguire? It's just let the manager sign who he wants. I think we've all played Football Manager or FIFA, or some of us have played both. We all sign players for our teams and then immediately think that Pochettino should sign the same players that we sign for our teams, just like that. Do you know what? I don't want us to sign Bradley Deck from Blackburn, but if Pochettino comes into Levy and says, I want Bradley Deck, I want Daniel Levy to go for Bradley Deck, not say to him, "Nah, he's not very good. I'll try and get you another bloke from Schalke for 40 million or something."
Just, good player, by the way, Bradley Dack.
Yeah, but you know what? You know how I mean it, Lowe. It's just...
Yeah, exactly.
I've said it before, and as mad as it sounds, if he came to me and said, "I want to sign Jack Wilshere," then I hope Tottenham sign Jack Wilshere. It's as simple as that, as much as I despise...
Well, I hope he doesn't, Jace.
No, but that's my whole point.
Of course, I get where you're coming from.
That he wants, not who fans think can take you to the next level.
Go on, Lowe.
I think the important thing to remember about Pochettino and the way he his team plays, you know, they're so fluid, but at the same time, each role has, you know, a specific responsibility in the team. And so what he needs is players that can perform that role, players that are either already performing that particular role and can also be malleable enough, tactically malleable enough to fit in that way and learn the way that he wants you know, a number 8 to play, or a number 9 to play, or a number 10, or a number 4, whatever. So, you know, when you sign big stars, you know, they're more established and they're more set in their ways of doing things, and it can be a lot more difficult to take a big star out of a club and suddenly turn him into a different sort of player, you know, and especially the type of player that Pochettino wants, which is somebody who's going to be running around like a headless chicken, you know, committed to the team, doing all the running that's required, you know, both in training and in pre-season as well as in games. I mean, I guess, you know, somebody like Van der Vaart's a good example where he came in the Redknapp setup, where the players are kind of given the freedom to play to their current strengths and develop those strengths, and, you know, they mould the team around a star like that. You know, Pochettino, I think I've said it before, Pochettino's teams are not about one man or one solo man. It's kind of the sum of all the parts is greater than any one player. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the idea, is that you have 11 players, and those 11 players together make a team that is far more successful, or hopefully more successful, is going to win more games than a team that is, shall we say, a couple of rings lower down the pecking order, but has a Gareth Bale in it, or has a Rafa van der Vaart in it. Do you see what I mean?
Of course.
So it just doesn't kind of really align itself with going out and spending 50, 60 million pounds on great players. And I say great players, 50, 60 million pounds on big players, players who are already established at huge clubs for huge fees. And listen, Tottenham don't have the funds to do that yet at the moment. They don't, they never have. And Pochettino has always known that from the first day that he came in to today. So, you know, I don't think that's going to change, and it's certainly not going to change in January. I mean, I guess we'll get on and talk a little bit more about it later on. But
we will, yeah.
But again, you know, January is a difficult month for every team. There's not a lot of stuff out there on the market, especially, you know, where really good players are concerned. So, you know, it's going to be quiet for every team, and Tottenham have only signed what? Two players in the January window in the last, I don't know how many years, since Nelson and Sahar was brought in.
The classic duo, Lowe, yeah, the classic duo.
It's only two since then. Well, I mean, that's a great example, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Of going out and buying two players because you think you need them, but
that's right.
Neither were really worth buying, really, were they? Mm. Because neither of them really made an impact. They were the only players that were available on the market because, you know, in January, the situation that you have, the kind of players you can buy are players that are not really playing at their clubs because they're not good enough. And the players that are really good, the kind of breakout stars that are perhaps having their first really good season, or the players that are playing really well, the clubs don't want to let go. They don't want to get rid of. So, you know, you're looking, especially when you're a top club and you're trying to find a player who can make a difference for you, it's really difficult. You know, you need a set of circumstances like they were at PSG when Tottenham were able to get Lucas Moura, which is that they needed to bring themselves into line, or try and bring themselves into line with FFP. You know, they had a player who was a star under the manager before but wasn't fancied by the current manager. So, you know, if you're a team like Spurs, I guess that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a player who's, you know, been very, very good under a previous manager, but perhaps the club have made a change. Or, you know, and somebody's not getting a game, and the selling club or potential selling club needs to accrue some funds.
Careful, Lyle, you'll have everyone telling you we're signing Isco next.
Oh, the Isco one, that never goes away. But just on the somewhere you spoke about with Pochettino, just to kind of bring it back to that. So as we know,
yeah,
Pochettino shortly went on after the summer to sign a new 5-year contract at the club worth up to $8.5 million a year. The deal, which runs to 2023, makes Poch still one of the highest earning managers in the Premier League, just behind Pep Guardiola and, ironically, Jose Mourinho at the time. Now, as we know, Spurs were the first Premier League club not to make a summer signing since the transfer window was introduced in 2003. But they did tie down Harry Kane, Davinson Sanchez, Heung-min Son, Eric Lamella, Harry Winks and Pochettino himself to long-term contracts. Just how important, Lowell, do you think that was for Spurs to do those deals, to get those players tied down over?
Well, very important, of course. I mean, this ties into the transfer market, obviously, because, you know, you're looking at Tottenham's team, and when Tottenham go into the market, they have to think about if they're going to bring somebody in, they've either got to be better than what they've got or filling a gap that's moving on. And so if you look at Tottenham's team and the players they've got and the way they've performed over the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, it's hard to see that, you know, that many better players out there that are obtainable for Tottenham. So the beeline has to be tying down the current stars that they've got. And certainly, I think one of the main ingredients to Tottenham being successful this year again and over the last few years is the continuity in the team and the familiarity of the team, and that the players all know each other. So, you know, if you've got 11 players that you rely on, and they click together so well, and they've been playing together for a number of years, that's an ideal situation to be in for any club. You know, no club wants a high turnover of players every transfer window. They want their top players to be recommitting, and, you know, them recommitting to long-term contracts can only be a good thing. It can only be a good sign of the environment being the right for Tottenham, and, you know, the more players and the manager showing that they're committed to Tottenham for a long time, it's only a positive thing. So yeah, it was very, very important.
Jace, people forget that, don't they, sometimes, that over the summer they kind of highlight the fact that we didn't sign any players, but I do seem to forget that Spurs did go out there and consciously try and tie down some of their key stars to real long-term contracts.
Absolutely, and don't forget, one of the things that we are always criticised for is, number one, you know, you've got to win a trophy, and number two, you've got to keep your best players, and Tottenham are a selling club. Well, you know, Kyle Walker apart, who's really, have we lost since Bale? You know, Daniel Levy has done that. He has tied players down. You know, with constant talk over Toby in the summer, but he's still there. So, you know, whether he leaves at the end of this year, or he'll probably get that deal, you know, the extra 1 year triggered, then it's up to, we'll see how we go. But where Tottenham have the chance to tie players down, they, you know, there'll always be the odd one or two that drifts. But as you say, all those players, and then since then, Dele Alli and such, you can't really criticise the way the club have gone about it.
Now, Lyle, I want to come back round to yourself. We saw Harry Kane sign that new deal, and Daniel Levy is, you know, it's renowned out there that he smashed Spurs' wage structure to give Harry Kane that new contract worth, up to what we're led to believe, $62.4 million. A six-year deal that could earn him $200,000 a week, including bonuses, which almost doubles his previous deal. Just how big a contract, Lyle, was that, do you think, for Spurs in their history, given that we're led to believe that is the deal that smashed the club's wage structure?
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, those figures speak for themselves, don't they? It's the biggest deal that the club have ever done for a player. But, I mean, it's a sign of their opinion of Kane and what he's done for the club and what he can still do for the club. You know, these guys entering his prime still, isn't he? And he's still so young and still got so much to offer. So I think it's just it's a marker of that. And I think, as I've said before, Kane is kind of the you know, the nucleus of the team, really. He's the one that you want. He's the example you want to use to every young player coming through the academy and anybody else you want to sign, really, of the kind of the model professional, the ideal player. You know, somebody that takes his work and his game and the club serious in equal measure. You know, and somebody who's committed to the club in a very professional way. So, you know, you have to reward people like that, and it's good to see that they've done that. And yeah, obviously it's great for Tottenham that he's committed for that length of time.
And then following on from that, Lyle, we obviously had the news in the last recent months that Dele Alli signed a new contract, keeping him to the club and to 2024, having received what we're led to believe a bumper pay rise. Is that, you know, with Dele Alli, I think I've always been of a concern, and I think, you know, just generally, he's such a superstar of a player. We always think Ali's maybe got this pathway in his mind that Spurs isn't his final destination. you know, given his rapid progression in the Spurs shirt, do you still believe that his long-term future is at the club rather than that contract being just to protect his value for years to come?
Yeah, I think so. But I think contracts are not necessarily one thing or the other, aren't they? When, you know, new contracts are a symbol of another thing, of a number of things. Not only, you know, are you rewarding players for you know, what they've achieved for your club, and Tottenham have that kind of wage structure in place, or that contract structure in place, where when players, you know, reach a certain number of games and reach a certain milestones in terms of goals, appearances, and what have you, they reward their players with new contracts, and you have to do that because that's an incentive for a player to perform highly. You know, you've got to give players lots and lots of reasons to perform at their highest level. Obviously, not just for the manager and for the team. You know, that comes first and foremost, but obviously contractually, if a player knows that if he reaches a certain milestone or benchmark, and he's going to get rewarded, you know, with the contract to go with it, then you know, it's good inspiration, good motivation for them. So, but again, it's also protection. That's the other side of any contracts, is, you know, at the same time also protects the club and against any, you know, anybody who might want to poach him later. And when you want to keep your stars away from the midst of big clubs, and I think Tottenham have positioned themselves really well actually in that regard, because you know, even the big clubs, although they are spending huge amounts, or have been spending huge amounts on transfer fees over the last few years, I think that there is still a certain amount of wariness over doing that. And Tottenham have positioned themselves now really where their best players can only go to a very small select group of clubs in Europe, potentially, because of the amount of money that it would cost to get them. And so it's put them in, obviously, in a strong position where the players are less likely to be poached, because, you know, the transfer fees are going to be so huge, so monumental, that it's a huge outlay and a huge commitment even for the biggest clubs to decide to do that. So I think even the biggest clubs, even your Barcelonas, are looking at signing players who are more, you know, up and coming, for want of a better expression. I mean, you look at Barcelona signing of players like Malcolm, for example. You know, they've gone and signed a player from Bordeaux rather than going and signing a player from Saint-Germain or Bayern Munich or Juventus. You know, I think Tottenham are in a good position there, and they've done good things with the contract. The contract ethos is good, and I think Rebecca Capel-Horn's had a lot to do with that. I think she should be given credit for coming in and helping in that regard.
Jace, we just mentioned it there to you. It was my last question about, you know, the importance of tying down these players to contracts. Do you think Spurs in general, from the media, do we get enough credit for that, Jace, for tying down these players to long-term deals like we have with the likes of Harry Kane, breaking that wage structure? Dele Alli, such a big player, as we know. You know, I think if he was up for sale tomorrow, God, all the top clubs in Europe would want to sign him. How important should the club be, like Lyle says there, recognised and given the praise of keeping hold of these, you know, real, real important players for the club?
I think they've done a fantastic job, but it doesn't stop the speculation, does it? I mean, we'll still get it, as I say, with the summer. It's now all around Ericsson. It's moved on from Toby to Ericsson. It would have involved Dele Alli. It would have involved Kane. And we'll reach the end of the season. And you know, if Tottenham haven't won a trophy, I'm sure it'll be, well, you know, Pochettino wants to go here and he'll take Kane with him. I don't think you'll ever stop all the speculation going. All we can say is the club seem to address those issues as and when they need doing. And, you know, I don't think you can criticise the club for that. But, you know, they don't necessarily need the credit in the media. I've given up, you know, with great respect to Lowe, I couldn't give two shits what the media say about any of our players or any of the club anymore. There's so much rubbish spoken, and, you know, that's on Sky, it's on BBC, it's in every single newspaper. There's just so much there's column inches to fill, and there's airwaves to fill. So, you know, they've got to talk about certain things.
Law, I want to come back round to you. We've heard recent speculation over Christian Eriksen's new contract. Now, Pochettino came out recently and said that he's not worried about Eriksen's contract situation and insists the club are working hard to tie him down to a new long-term contract. Now, Eriksen's deal at the moment expires in 2020. There's been no breakthrough talks between the club and the players, we understand it, at the moment, where they've been ongoing since the back end of last season. I wonder what you can maybe tell us about that. And do you personally feel like that he will end up signing a new contract at the club? What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, listen, I I'm not aware of there being anything particularly sinister going on in terms of discussions with him. I mean, I'm sure Spurs are hopeful, and like Pochettino said, they're working hard to get an agreement with him. You know, I'm not sure why that one is one of particular concern, especially not at this point with it still having, 18 months left to run when we get into January. So, you know, that's not a concern yet, I don't think, for the club. You know, there are other more pressing issues, I think, aren't there, with certainly with Toby's situation heading into the summer. I think if you're Christian Eriksen, you just want to... You're probably thinking, you know, making sure where the club's going to go, aren't you, this season? You know, rather than doing it halfway through the season, but perhaps looking to where the club's going to finish this year and how, you know, how competitive they are at the end of the year for any trophies, and making sure they're in the Champions League again next year before you decide, you know, whether you're going to recommit or not. So, again, like I said, not one I've heard that there's any issues at the moment, or at least anything to worry about.
It's funny because, on the Eriksen subject, when we spoke about him in the past, we've heard, you know, years ago that he apparently turned down Chelsea, and it seems that Eriksen has got in his head this kind of, master plan, or he's got maybe, should I say, a pathway. And I suppose the main question that we always kind of fear as Spurs fans is that, is Tottenham, in his mind, his final destination, or is it a Barcelona? Is it a Real Madrid? Is it a Paris Saint-Germain? Do you think if Spurs could fulfil all of his ambitions at the club, they could win trophies, Premier League, complete in the Champions League like we are doing year after year? Do you think that would be enough to keep him? Or again, is it just a case of, like you're saying there, it's difficult to know at this moment in time?
Well, listen, if you're a club and you're winning trophies and you're, you know, all competing in the Champions League towards the last echelons of the competition, then those are all the things, all the ingredients to keep a top player like Christian Eriksen, aren't there? So yeah, in theory, yeah. You know, if that's where Tottenham are and that's where Tottenham are competing, then, you know, there's no reason why Christian wouldn't be at the club for years to come. But like any player, he's ambitious and will want to win those trophies. So there comes a point, doesn't there, in a player's career where they have to sit and think, you know, is the club that I'm at going in the direction that I want it to go in? Or you know, before I finish my career and hang up my boots or I'm too old to compete at the top level, do I need to make a decision to make sure I can spend 3 or 4 years playing at, you know, the top level? And do I need to move clubs to do that? But I don't think we're in that situation at the moment with Christian. Okay. Not yet.
Lol, want to come back round to you and discuss Toby Alderweireld, who underlined his happiness at Tottenham as his contract continues to wind down. Now, the defender, as we expected, was going to leave the club last summer with Daniel Levy and Maurizio Pochettino, as we understood it, open to cash in on him with his contract expiring next summer. Can you just explain, Lol, how does his contract situation work in terms of when that release clause becomes active? Can you give us, or give the listeners also, an understanding of how that's going to work?
So the contract as it stands runs out in 2019, but there's a year-long option that can be extended, that can be triggered, similar to how Yamba Tonga's was today. But the opportunity in the next summer's transfer window for a club to buy him for £25 million. So that window of opportunity for any clubs that might want him expires about 14 days before the end of the transfer window next summer. So obviously now with that transfer window having been brought forward to before the season starts, the kind of the window of opportunity for clubs is not as big, which obviously, you know, if he doesn't agree a new deal between now and then, you know, that makes things a little bit more difficult for prospective buying clubs. But then on the other hand, it perhaps doesn't, because, you know, if you can do the negotiations up to that point, and you can, clubs, you know, potential buying clubs will have it in mind that once they slap in that offer between that time, then it will be successful. So I think it's in Spurs' interest to try and get him on another contract if they can before then. I don't know where discussions are at with that, to be honest, at this point. I certainly don't think there'll be any movement there in January. So there's still some time left, I guess, to try and agree something with him if they can. But on the other hand, I know that obviously they're making contingencies for potentially losing him. They've been out looking at other centre halves and other potential centre halves, or Nathan Aké being one of them. Right. I think I reported on earlier about a month or so ago. So Yeah, Toby's situation is obviously different from Christian's and others, where and Jan's in terms of it being a little bit more time sensitive, shall we say, and a little bit more impending at the moment. But interestingly, though, someone told me recently that the Spurs haven't actually had any formal contact for Toby at all, and didn't in the summer.
Really, there was not one club of interest.
Does there was not. Not-
Really?
Well, you know, the thing that, you know, how these things work is that, you know, the people who do the talking initially over these sorts of things are you know, intermediaries, the people that, yep. that represent the players and what have you. So messages get passed along, and obviously in discussions with clubs and things, you know, you'll be getting information from intermediaries that you know as to whether clubs are actually interested or not. But obviously until that interest is made formal, until there's actually a call, an approach from a club, you know, you never really know. And yeah, interestingly, somebody told me just a few days ago that the Spurs have, well, yeah, this is their information, was that Spurs have actually never had a formal approach for Toby Alderweireld so far. So
that is crazy.
Yeah, interesting. And you know, yeah, it's on the one hand, it can seem a little bit hard to believe considering the stature of the player, but there you go.
I've got to bring Jason. Jason, can you believe this? After all the shows, after all the speculation, after all the Twitter responses backwards and forwards, I mean, speaking of Lyle, there's actually never been a formal bid come in for Toby. Can you? What's all this last 12 months been for? Or 12 years, 24 months been for, Jace?
Rick, it doesn't surprise me at all, and that's why the transfer window bores me. It's just week after week after week of the same stuff, and you fall for it every bloody time.
No, you love it. Don't give me that. You love it. Lol, I promise you, Jason's at home with his blazer on. He's got the Sky Sports shirt. Don't worry about that. He's got the suit. Trust me. Trust me, he's got it all.
You know,
he's got a yellow tie on.
You said yourself. I mean, you said yourself you're worried about Mourinho being sacked today. The only club that was ever linked with Toby was Man United. The manager that wanted him was Mourinho, and now he's been sacked. So that removes that, doesn't it?
Does it?
There you go.
Does
well,
it?
There you go. I mean, listen. There you go. Yeah, again, yeah, I think, you know, as it remains to be seen what United are going to do in January. I mean, obviously they're going to have an interim manager, and they're kind of, I guess, they're in a little bit of limbo, probably is maybe the right word, in terms of their recruitment in January, because they can't, I guess they can't, or they're not likely to recruit for their interim manager for the rest of the season. I mean, it's very unlikely that you're going to recruit for 6 months. You know, it's going to be something that's looked at probably next summer when the new manager comes in and new sporting director comes in. So I think I'll be surprised if United do anything in January, and that certainly obviously eases the potential for United to come in for someone like Toby.
Okay.
All I say, Rick, is I definitely think that come next summer that someone will come with a £25 million. It could be a team in blue based in London. It could be a team based in on Merseyside in red, because it's let's be fair, £25 million is a drop in the ocean to them, and they will perceive it as a great chance to weaken Tottenham. But the interesting thing to be is whether they come up with a big enough attraction as a package to take him. It's not just the £25 million; it's taking him as well and selling their clubs to him. So
yeah, you're Chelsea, absolutely right. You're absolutely
if Chelsea
right.
weren't in the Champions League, is that such an attractive proposition? If Liverpool were of pit Manchester City to the title, it's an entirely different proposition with them doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the like you said, the suitor has to be there, the right suitor. And you know, if you look back at the summer and you look at the market for centre halves, and you look at which clubs bought centre halves in the summer for big money, there wasn't a lot of movement in the centre half market in the summer. There wasn't a lot done. You know, Manchester United coming into the last few days of the window and thinking about centre halves. I think you were looking at people like Harry Maguire, weren't they? And I think they tried for Diego Godin, and you know, Toby would have been somewhere on that list. But other than that, there weren't any real other clubs looking to do centre halves at the £50 million mark that perhaps Alderweireld would have wanted to go and play for. So, you know, again, it can change next year. There might be more clubs out there looking for centre halves that Toby might want to play for. And certainly £25 million for a player of his stature is an absolute steal. Yeah. But yeah, again, listen, there's a long way to go until we get to that point. I mean, you look at Chelsea now, and they've got two very good first choice centre halves, and so have City, and so have Liverpool, and you know, certainly in the Premier League. If you want to be first choice centre half in the Premier League team, there aren't that many opportunities there for a player to go and move to another club, at least in the Premier League. So.
Interesting. Let's turn our attention to another Belgian, and this is Moussa Dembélé. Now, from what we hear, Lowe, again, this is what we hear out there, that we hear he's happy to run down his current contract, which expires in the summer. There's currently no agreement in place to extend his stay at Spurs, nor has an agreement with a new club been found yet. Now, Dembélé, as we know, is actually injured at the moment.
Yeah.
We don't know when he's likely to be fit. I mean, my question to you is, do you think he could possibly leave the club in January? And if so, how does he pass a medical in the condition he's in, Lowe? Does that mean also that, again, that could be prolonged to the summer if he's to leave Tottenham?
Yeah, I don't think he'll leave in January. I mean, what I understand was going on with Dembélé in the summer is that he was quite open to a move to China, but nothing materialised there because there weren't really any international spaces left at Chinese clubs. And I think also in China they are working towards more of a financial fair play model of their own, I think. So they've kind of come out of their initial, shall we say, burst of huge investment in foreign talent, and I think they're now trying to be a little bit more careful and responsible. So there's less of that kind of willy-nilly big spending, we'll just go and get this person, we'll go and get that person. I think one of the options on the table that was put to him was to potentially go to Inter for a year and then move to China, which I understand he didn't really fancy. He was more happy to just stay at Tottenham. You know, another player has been happy at Tottenham, but you know, he's 31 now, he'll be 32 next year. His injury problems have happened again this year, obviously. You know, which is such a shame because he's such a good player. You know, a fit Moussa Dembélé, even at 31, 32, is somebody you would have in your team every week. But unfortunately, he's just not at that point in his career where he can really do that, which is a real shame for him. You know, if we were looking at a 26, 27-year-old Moussa Dembélé, you know, I think he'd be another one that Spurs would be looking to give a long-term contract to. But I think the conditions for that are not really there. And, you know, I've certainly been reporting over the last few months that they've been scouting for replacements. I think I've been reporting that for the best part of a year now, actually. I think it was a year ago we started talking about that. Obviously, I mentioned people back in the day, like Guendouzi, who went to Arsenal, and I think we talked about Kondogbia, and he's moved as well, hasn't he? Signed permanently for Valencia. Who else did we talk about? It was Bissouma, obviously. He was one they were monitoring. He's gone to Brighton and done okay. But there's lots of other players as well that are still kind of out there. They've been looking at in that position.
He said Hadara, wasn't it? At Hadara, there's a Decore as well. Is that the similar position? And
yeah, Bella,
are these players again like realistic?
Realistic. Well, I mean, what do you mean by realistic? They're realistic in the sense that...
Realistic at Tottenham. That's what I mean by someone like Dembélé.
Realistic in the sense that I'm sure they would want to go and play for Tottenham. I mean, Haidara is more of a sort of an attacking-minded player,
right?
Than Dembélé. I think he's even more of a sort of an attacking central midfield player rather than that kind of number six type. You know, the model for that position, the kind of the ideal recruit is someone like Frenkie de Jong, who has been around for not very long and managed to establish himself as kind of the hottest prospect in that position in Europe, and so much so that Ajax know that, and he's going to cost, you know, anything around the sort of £70 million or more mark. So I think that he's kind of been and gone for Spurs in terms of potential recruitment, but there are plenty of other players, you know, out there for that position. There's obviously Ndombele at Lyon that Tottenham like a lot. He's having another good season. He's being tracked by a host of big teams. I put a note out about that the other day.
So Rabiot, as we understand it, like, what can you say about him? Another player that's been heavily linked to the club. Do we understand it now that it looks like the player has agreed in principle to join Barcelona? Is that how we understand it to be at the moment? Or again, is that still at the moment?
I don't know if it's agreed. I don't know if that's the case, but I had a conversation with a source on the continent a few days ago, and we got into a conversation about Rabiot, because that sort of particular source has a kind of a, shall we say, an interest in that market and an interest in that particular player, or that kind of profile of a player, and he was quite sure that Rabiot had his eyes on a move to Barcelona, and that perhaps Frenkie de Jong, for example, as I mentioned before, was too expensive for Barcelona,
right,
and therefore saw Rabiot as more of an ideal player to bring in because of his contract situation. So where we talked, where we talked before about the types of players that Tottenham would want to go and sign from top clubs,
you
want to look for a player who's either out of favour and a club wants to offload, or a player whose contract situation is makes him an ideal target in terms of the transfers fee. So Adrien Rabiot, you've got 6 months left on his contract.
I've got to see where you're coming from.
Doesn't look like he's going to sign a new one. It's in a situation where he can let his contract run down if he doesn't go in January and move on to another big club and get a big signing on fee and not have to worry about transfer fees and all that kind of thing. So from what I gather is that Barcelona kind of looking at that one as something that could happen next summer. So yeah, I think I think because of that, I think it's not really one that Tottenham are going to pursue very, very strongly. But then, you know, if Barcelona get other ideas, then he might suddenly become a potential target again.
Okay.
But that's certainly the position I think that Tottenham are. If they're going to do anything in January, I think that would be the position that they would do something in, considering Dembele's contract situation and considering that they have a raft of injuries in midfield.
Well, Dyer now, isn't it? Eric Dyer again with the removal of his appendix. That sounds like it's come at really costly time for Spurs. It's such a busy period. Jace, I think we mentioned before that central midfield area, it's a problem for Spurs. We've got options there when everybody's fit. I'm going to ask Lowell in a second about Victor Wanyama's status, because again, like Lowell says there, it's just a host of injuries at the moment in that central midfield area for Tottenham.
Yeah, I think with Dembele, I think if a Chinese club wanted him, I'd let him go there in January and I'd give him a free transfer if he could pass a medical, because you're going to pay him for the last 6 months of his contract, so he's going to go on a free in the summer anyway, isn't he? And why pay him 6 months on a contract if you're not really going to play him anyway? You might as well just pay it up and let him go if China's where he wants to go. I think, you know, the big thing with why another reason why China wouldn't have taken him last year is that, I don't know if people realise, the transfer fees in China, when they were paying those huge fees, you know, there's now the Chinese government brought in 100% tax on every signing. So you sign a player for 30 million, the Chinese club's got to pay out 60 million to get the player, because 30 million also goes in tax. So a free transfer for Dembele suddenly makes a lot more sense than paying 15 million for him, doesn't it? So, you know, I think if an offer came in for him, I personally would say, thanks, Moussa, been brilliant, but, you know, we need to move on, because you just feel that we'll be stuck with him for 6 months and he'll perhaps only play four or five games. And I don't actually want to see Moussa Dembele really struggling through those five games like we saw Nedley doing in those last couple of months. I don't want to see Moussa Dembele getting dispossessed by Jordan Henderson and people like that, where you think, you know, we've seen him walk past people like that and now suddenly complete idiots on the pitch are catching him and taking the ball off him. I don't want to see Moussa Dembele go that way.
No, none of us do. I mean, Lyle, just on Yann Vertonghen, I was going to ask you about Yann, but the good news is, on the back of me doing the running order for the show, we heard Yann, you know, sign a new contract at the club. It's been activated now for a contract until 2020, where we're understood he's also open to hopefully signing a new long-term contract at the club. Is that how we understand it at the moment, Lyle?
Yeah, I think both sides would be quite keen to discuss that at some point, but I think they're quite relaxed at the moment.
That's good news, though. Very good news. Yann Vertonghen, Jace, your initial reaction to that? I mean, he's been, as we've said all along, apart from you'd argue, you know, that Arsenal game in the Premier League a couple of weeks ago, one of his very uncharacteristic performances, he's been one of Spurs' most consistent, Jace, hasn't he, over the last couple of years?
Absolutely he has, but he's been brilliant for certainly throughout Pochettino's time, but I just... Just of all the places to have that absolute shocking nightmare, it had to be there, didn't it? Why couldn't that have been Rochdale in the cup last year or something?
That's football, isn't it? I mean, Lowell, bring it back around to yourself to discuss another central midfielder situation, Victor Wanyama. Now, Wanyama last featured for Spurs on November the 10th against Crystal Palace, owing to a lingering knee injury. Now, he's only made 7 appearances across all competitions for Spurs this season. Where do you stand on Victor Wanyama's future at Tottenham? Because when he came to the club, he had that wonderful first season where he was incredible. He was brilliant. But since then, Lowell, it's kind of been injury after injury after injury. And you do concern yourself whether, because of the amount of injuries he's had, would he ever get back to that form of when he first kind of came through at Tottenham and, you know, we got him over the line from Southampton?
It's difficult to say, isn't it? Because he's had so many injury problems, it's difficult to know, you know, if that player is really in there still. Because after, you know, when players have long term injuries like that, recurring injuries like that, they can really kind of take their toll. And I think, you know, again, that's one of the reasons why Tottenham are looking at that area either, you know, next month or certainly in the summer, is because of Wanyama's injuries obviously being a, you know, also of a concern, and not necessarily knowing whether this guy can, you know, can make it through full season. So it's a real shame for him, because he's, like you said, he had such a good season that year, and, you know, people go banging on about N'Golo Kanté being the kind of ideal player in that position. I think Wanyama's level in that season, that first season, was brilliant, as good as Kanté's. I think and, you know, if he'd have stayed fit, then people would be talking about Victor Wanyama as much as they've been talking about N'Golo Kanté. So, yeah, it's a real shame and real concern, really, that he might not be able to get back up to that level. But I do hope he can, because he's a good player. I like him a lot. I like that kind of midfield player.
Agree with that. Yeah, agree with that. Spot on. Jace, Wanyama's situation at the club. It's such a shame, isn't it? Because like Lyle said there, in his first season, he was simply incredible, wasn't he? And it's just such a shame that he's had, as I said, that injury after injury. He's never really been able to get back to that season or his first season at the club where he was formidable in that midfield for Tottenham.
No, I don't think we'll see that again, because I think he'll now, I mean, with the knee problems that he's had, I think, you know, even if he comes back to fitness, he'll always be, you know, 2 or 3 games in, 1 or 2 games out, 2 or 3 games in. And even some of those that he's in, he'll always be fighting for fitness and fighting for that mobility. And mobility was a big thing for him. So, you know, if he's lost 2 or 3% of that will have a knock-on effect. So, you know, he's another one, I suppose, sadly, that I'd be saying, I think we spoke about him on the last pod anyway, didn't we? How difficult it will be to move him on. Again, you may well have to give him a free transfer.
Okay, interesting. Lyle, we've got a clutch of fringe players here. Before we're going to ask you, we're going to do some listener questions to kind of finish off. We've got a clutch of fringe players I want to ask your analysis on very, very quickly. So the likes of Vorm, Lorente, Janssen, Nkudu, Cameron Carter-Vickers. As a summary for those guys that are kind of on the fringe of the squad, as we know, Cameron Carter-Vickers at the moment, I think he's on Ipswich on loan. But have these guys generally got a long-term future at the club? We've heard Vorm come out recently and say that, you know, he's not happy about his time on the bench. We've heard Lorente come out and say that, you know, if a move to Bilbao was open to him to go back to his former club, he'd be open to that. Janssen, his agent, has come out and said recently he doesn't know where his future holds. Nkudu, who knows what's going on with him. What can you tell us about those 5 players, Lowell, as a summary on those guys?
Yeah, I think it's their future is looking pretty bleak, isn't it? I think it was in the summer. Carter-Vickers is on loan at Swansea, I think, isn't he?
Carter-Vickers.
Not Ipswich. Ipswich was at Ipswich the end of last year, and he's
that's
at Swansea
right.
this year.
Carter-Vickers at Swansea this year, that's right, sorry.
Yeah, he's at Swansea at the moment. And I mean, I was at the recent Brentford-Swansea game. He wasn't in the starting lineup. He came on for a bit. Didn't really pull up any trees, to be honest. You know, I just don't think he's quite at the level. I mean, if you look at where Juan Foyth is already after coming over for, you know, not a great deal of length of time, I think he's taken to it a lot quicker and looks more of the kind of prospect that young prospect that Tottenham want to bring through than Cameron. Who, as you mentioned, Nkudu. Yeah, I mean, there was plenty of loan offers for him in the summer from some German clubs, Mainz being one of them, I think, as well. And I don't think the right offer was there at that particular point, but certainly I think there's something that will be revisited in January. Janssen, I'm sure, as well, will be wanting to get out on loan somewhere. He's obviously had an injury, but I think he's come through the worst of that now, and so I think he'd be another one that would potentially move on. Llorente obviously has hardly played since he came to the club. I mean, on the one hand, that was to be expected because he's only going to play when Harry's not fit.
That's right, yeah.
But still, I think, you know, Tottenham have tried some other things, haven't they? Even more so than playing Llorente. So I think it'd be difficult to see whether he'll continue past the end of this season. Obviously, Michel Vorm, given the age that he's at, I think he's out of contract as well at the end of the year, but his is more of a kind of a rolling contract, I would call it. Not in any kind of an official sense, but that's probably the kind of nickname to give it because, right, you know, his relationship with Hugo Lloris is very good, I'm told, and he's quite integral to the way the goalkeepers train.
Okay, that's interesting.
So they push each other very, very intensely in training, and I think that, you know, one of the reasons why they've been very keen to keep Mish is because of that, you know, not necessarily because he's obviously getting on a bit as well now. I think he's, what, he's 30, 33, 34, I think now. And
that's right, yeah.
So I think it's something that tends to be explored, you know, towards the end of the season, really. It's just a conversation that's had with him and his representatives in the club, you know, as to whether he can keep pushing at that level and whether he wants to keep pushing at that level and keep playing second fiddle or what. So I think that's one to kind of play by ear towards the end of the year. But yeah, in terms of some outgoings, you see, I think one thing we've not touched on yet is Tottenham's homegrown players.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Because I'll tell you what, we've got a question in here and we'll bring that into it. That is from SM Part at SM Part 1. It says, do we need to start signing homegrown players or is it too early yet? Lyle, what's your take on that one?
Well, the answer is yes, because Tottenham submitted a 24-man Premier League squad instead of 25-man Premier League squad because they only had 7 homegrown players. So there's a gap there. So there's a player missing. So if they want to submit, resubmit a 25-man squad for the rest of the Premier League season, it needs to have a homegrown player in it. And there aren't any, as far as I'm aware, any players who have come through the academy that will be turning of the kind of senior age that will qualify as homegrown. So obviously when players have spent time in the academy and then are no longer under 21 players, they can, you know, become homegrown status players. But I don't think there are any that's happening to. So that's obviously why they went for Grealish, because they needed to, you know, that they were looking for that kind of a position. And he was obviously a homegrown player. So if Spurs want to bring anybody in January and not move anybody out, then it's going to have to be a homegrown player. But if they are able to move out one or two, then obviously spaces open up. So I know Janssen wasn't named in the Premier League squad, but Nkudu was.
If you were to
move Nkudu out, obviously that 24-man squad would become a 23-man squad. So you'd potentially have a space there for a foreign player to come in and it still be a 24-man squad with a one space there. So there's perhaps a little bit of leeway there if they're able to move out GK somewhere and bring someone in. So on the one hand, it is a pressing issue, but it's not as pressing if there's a bit of movement there. But obviously you need to be able to move players out to fill those spaces. So there's a little bit of a kind of a juggling act, so to speak, to be had there. But it's interesting, you know, there's plenty of good homegrown players out there that Spurs could potentially bring in. I think I mentioned Nathan Ake before, who's one they've been monitoring. You know, there's more good players.
Some names I've got here I want to ask you about. Lewis Cook, David Brooks, Callum Wilson. They've apparently, Spurs have admired these players. Is that right? Is that how you see it at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned before that Tottenham will look at certain clubs more closely than others in terms of the way that they develop players themselves and the way that they play. And so when I talked about Pochettino liking players that can play in a certain position and play in a certain way and looking for players that are already playing in a similar fashion, some people might scoff, and especially those that want Tottenham to go out and sign huge marquee players from big clubs, but I think Bournemouth personally are doing very, very well.
They are doing
very well with the squad that they've built. You know, they are a good side, and they are a club that play that operate on a very, very modest budget with players that they've mostly brought up from the Championship themselves, and yet are able to compete in the top 8-10 clubs in the Premier League against other clubs who have massive budgets, who've spent lots of money on, you know, lots of emerging talent and otherwise. And I think the fact that they've been able to do that is you know, a testament to not only the way that the club's set up and the way that Eddie Howe works, but also the quality of the players that they've had. So if you're Tottenham and you're looking to recruit the next kind of wave of players coming through who are playing at an excellent Premier League level, and I mean that statistically as well, if you look through the stats and start comparing players statistically, a lot of Bournemouth players score quite highly. Callum Wilson obviously being one of them. He's more of a centre forward, so I think, you know, in terms of Tottenham signing Callum Wilson, it's much less likely because he's going to come in and he's not going to play because Kane can play, isn't he? Although you might see him as an ideal backup, I'm not sure Callum Wilson would fancy that. He's in a point in his career where he's been playing all the time, and if he's going to move up to another level, to a big club, he's going to want to do that and be the first choice number nine. So, but certainly Brooks is a star in the making, you know, and he's an interesting one to look out for. I know there's been some interest in Lewis Cook before, but I think he's injured at the moment. I think he's got quite a
ACL, hasn't he, Lewis Cook?
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, it's ACL, so I mean, it's certainly
it's a mid to long term injury then, isn't
next it? Year, yeah. Long term.
The thing that rules him, obviously rules him out as a target initially. I know there's a bit of interest there. Not much, though, I don't think, because I think Cook's more of a sort of a Winks-type player.
Right.
So you have to remember, in terms of midfield signings, the kind of player that Tottenham want to bring in, they want to bring in that kind of, like, that marauding type, that Dembele type. Okay, so Winks is more of a kind of deep-lying playmaker. It gives you a different option there. But what
you
Tottenham
mean a bit like Moussa Sissoko?
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
How things changed, Lo, eh? Remember you was on the last time, Lo?
Different player, isn't he?
It's crazy. Who's this player we spoke about, Lo? Who have we signed?
Yeah, I know. Well, he's like a new signing, isn't he? But that, almost like he's been playing recently. I mean, I think they would want somebody who's a bit more technically gifted than him. But they want, rather than a deep-line playmaker, rather than a Harry Winks or a Jean-Michel Seri or someone like that, I think they want someone who's a bit more of, well, I know they want someone who's a bit more of a marauding type. So you only have to look at the way Kondogbia plays, who we know has been a target, or that's you right. Look at the way Ndombele plays, or the look at the way that Abdoulaye Doucouré plays. These are all players Tottenham are interested in because that's the profile that what they want. But if you're looking a bit further up the field, the kind of Grealish type player, well, David Brooks fits that profile. And the fact that he's come up from Sheffield United to Bournemouth and just immediately swanned into the Premier League level and started tearing some stuff up is a testament, and it just shows you the kind of player that he is. You know, it takes a lot of mental strength to be able to do that, to be able to come up to the level. And it's like almost similar to what Dele Alli did in a way. I know he's not doing it quite the same level as Alli, and obviously not as a bigger club, but it's similar in that this is a guy who's come up at a very young age from the Championship or lower to the Premier League and gone, yeah, I'll have a bit of this. I'm not fazed at all. So he's an interesting one. He's an exciting prospect. But who else is there? Bournemouth. Obviously, Nathan Ake, I mentioned. Yeah, these are all players that Tottenham have been monitoring. And Ryan Fraser's another one who I like quite
really?
A lot.
Really? Okay, that's interesting. Good player.
I'm not sure if he qualifies as homegrown, then. I'd have to look that up as to whether he would qualify as homegrown status, because I'm not sure what his academy history is, to be honest.
You mentioned Lowell quite a few times throughout the night about Grealish. Can I ask you, we got a question in from Barry McSquiggan here. He says, will the club go back in for Grealish? Do you think that one's still around, Lowell? Is that kind of time been and gone now on Grealish? What do you think?
Well, I don't know anything about Grealish at this point. Obviously, he's signed a long contract since then, and his value has risen quite considerably, I think, because of that and because of he's carried on doing quite well. So rather than a 25 potential million-pound player, I think you're looking at more like 30, 35 now.
Really, God.
That's just the way the market's going, yeah. Well, listen, you know, the Championship has become... And again, this is kind of to the potential detriment of Premier League clubs in terms of recruitment. The Championship has now become a league that is arguably on par with some of the other top five leagues, I think. And there's certainly, you know, big investors and other big clubs and big agents who are looking at the Championship in that regard, because it's kind of the Premier League 2 in a way. It's kind of like the creche for the Premier League, isn't it? It's the kind of where Premier League clubs are made and become Premier League clubs. Do you see what I mean? So you only had to see that with Wolves and the amount of investment that went into Wolves, and you're now seeing, you know, there's a little bit of that at Nottingham Forest, and there's a little bit of that at Villa, and there's now potentially a little bit of that at Reading as well. So a knock-on effect of that is that the kind of prices that Championship players now cost are getting up towards, you know, lower Premier League levels, whereas before you could perhaps get yourself a bargain in the Championship, but not now. I mean, James Maddison went for 25 million. You know, Villa were knocking back 20, 25 million for Grealish from Spurs in the summer. So that's only going to go up. I know clubs like Brentford, for example, were asking for north of 20 million for players like Ollie Watkins and Chris Meppham. So, you know, that's only going to increase as the demand goes up.
Interesting.
So it's difficult to get players out of the Championship.
Jason, I want to come round to you. There's a question here from Reggie Moore at Moore_Reggie, who says, "We are a very young team. Do you feel bringing in an experienced midfield enforcer, if any was out there, with silverware under their belt, would provide the cover for the injuries and control the midfield to get over the more difficult games?"
I think, well, first of all, who are they out there? Number two, you know, are they able to play in Pochettino's system? I think if, you know, we've had similar type questions before, isn't it? And we've said, what's the point of bringing in a really established a player if they're not going to fit into Pochettino's system, or if they're 32 years old, they can't physically play in Pochettino's way? I mean, you know, when you look at it, it sounds ideal, doesn't it? You bring this person in, but when you look around, find one that is possibly of use, because they're going to be 33, 34-year-old players that the big clubs don't want. I mean, if I said to you, what about bringing in Gary Cahill as a backup centre-half? But which Tottenham fan would take Gary Cahill? But there's a player that's got trophy-winning experience, that knows the Premier League. But nobody would want Gary Cahill, would they? What people actually want is a 24-year-old that's won 15 league titles and 25 FA Cups, and those ones don't exist, because the older ones at 34 won't be able to play the Pochettino pressing style of football. So it's, yes, it's in an ideal world, that's what you do, but the reality is you actually try and find one that would be a use. So say you went to Real Madrid and signed Marcelo. Pochettino won't want that because of an ego. So, you know, they come with an ego, or they come that they're too old to play Pochettino's way of football.
Interesting. Alon, I want to come back around to you.
By the way, I don't want to sign Gary Cahill either. Just in case somebody thinks I do. But Cesc Fabregas, there you go. There's a 34-year-old midfielder with lots of titles under his belt. Who wants Cesc Fabregas?
That'll get them well, I suppose, one of his Arsenal connections.
There you go.
Lol, bringing it back around to you. This is very bullish. This is from Moussa at Moussa CHFC, who says, "Will Spurs get anyone in January, or will it be the same as the summer?"
Ooh, well, you know me.
I'm putting
you on
the spot, Lowe, and I. I'm putting you on the spot. I'm really sorry.
No one can say for certain, can they? At this
you
point.
Can't.
Nah, listen. You know, they're not going to ignore the window. They're not going to ignore the potential opportunities. So, you know, if they do one, I would only really anticipate one. I wouldn't anticipate, you know, any more than that if they do any at all. So, I mean, there's nothing really concrete at the moment that I would want to hang my hat on and start talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, that. But then again, that is kind of similarly the case for quite a lot of clubs. So at the moment, you know, what I'm getting is that the clubs at the bottom of the table are going to be the busiest.
Right.
And that just comes from conversations from you know, agents and chief execs and chairmen and scouts and coaches or whatever from all the clubs. So, you know, your Huddersfields and Burnleys and Southamptons and Fulhams are going to be the busiest ones. And the top clubs less so, because I think that obviously, you know, when things are going well, and things are going well for Tottenham, you're not going to just kind of rock the boat for no reason. And also Tottenham are very much now in the realm of not bringing in players for the sake of it, as we well know. They're not just going to go and do something for the sake of it. You know, I think they're happy to suffer a little bit rather than go out and buy a mistake. You know, there's been plenty of players that have come into Tottenham over the last 5 to 10 years that you could say have, you know, been a bit of a waste of money, shall we say. So yeah, so listen, yeah, as I said last year and the year before, probably that I wouldn't expect a busy one for Tottenham, but if they if there's, you know, one to do, I think they will. And I think what I'm told so far is that that central midfield area is the area that they're looking at the most.
Okay, and guys, listening to the show, listeners, well, I've got to say, don't blame Lyle. There's no signings, all right? Just be very clear. It's not Lyle's fault. There's no signings. There's not going to be any. Go on, Jace.
I was going to say, there is one other caveat to throw into the equation about squads, about homegrowns, if you want to ask me.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, please do. Go on, Jace, over to you.
I think the other thing to bear in mind when you're going into the January window, and we're talking about losing Llorente's and Michel Vorm's passing on and Moussa Dembele's passing on, the other one thing that you do have to bear in mind, for Champions League rules, you can only make 3 squad changes in the next stage. So if you do decide that you want to move Vorm on, and you do decide you move Llorente on, and Foyt comes in and things like that, you can't just get rid of Wanyama, Dembele, Vorm, Llorente and all of those, because then you can't replace them all.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another thing that has to be considered. If they allow Llorente to move, and you've got to bring a striker in to cover Llorente, then you're stuck then with thinking who else you can move on.
Talk about the money, Lyle, coming back around to you. I mean, Jeff asked a question. Number one, is there money to spend? Number two, was there ever any real interest in Barrios? Now, it seemed over the summer there was that persistent link throughout the World Cup that Spurs were going to sign this bloke. He was at the training ground, even, some claimed, to sign a contract. What can you tell us on that, Lyle? Was there ever a concrete move? Was there ever any speculation that was true about that being credible for that player?
Yeah, they like it. They like him a bit, or they liked him a bit then. But no, there's never anything really more than that.
Right.
From
okay.
From what I was getting at that time, it was just a player that they liked, and you know, someone they'd watched quite close to the World Cup. But there wasn't any actual approaches for an actual deal being done, as far as I'm aware. You know, I hadn't heard that, and I'd made plenty of inquiries to try and ascertain as to whether that was the case. And he was just one on the list that they liked, and didn't really go any further. I think. I think he played well, didn't he, with Lerma. Lerma's the one that's now playing at Bournemouth, isn't he?
That's right, Lerma. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Barrios, yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Having Madrid, seen
him play.
Famously known for a Colombian player, famously known for the headbutt in the World Cup, wasn't he?
England. That's right. I remember now, yeah.
I think a lot of people put off
decent
him.
Little player, decent little player. I don't remember him pulling up any trees. But good little player with some potential. But there wasn't really anything concrete that went on in the summer with him.
Okay, a couple more quick five questions, Lyle. I promise I'm going to let you go. So these are some players that we've been linked to. You can just say yes or no to any of these if you feel Spurs have got an interest in them. We've got Declan Rice, Ben Chilwell, Lavin Kazawa, Joachim Anderson, Matis De Ligt. I think we had you on before about him. Nikola Milikovic. Those are names I've got. Malcolm also thrown in. Any of those players, Lyle, Spurs have got any interest in at all?
There was a couple of there that I'd never even heard of. So
that might be my pronunciation's like one of the else, maybe.
And that might make me sound like somebody who doesn't know a lot of players, but trust me, I do a hell of a lot of research.
You know? We know that.
I use Y-Scout a lot. I was at the Y-Scout forum in November.
Okay.
And which is, you know, which is, it's got every player in it ever. And lots of statistical algorithms in it for picking out the emerging talent, the top performing talent, and so there's a few players there that don't even appear on my lists there. Declan Rice, the one you said at the start, he's quite an interesting one. Obviously, with contract situation being as it is, and also being homegrown, I think.
And young. Project, isn't it?
He's an interesting one, but I think I'm not sure he's quite of the profile that Tottenham want. I think he's more of a kind of. He's more of a defensive midfielder, isn't he? He's more of a Dier kind of a player rather than a Dembele kind of a player. I think that's fair to say. I think his passing is not quite where it would need to be. Certainly passing into the final third. So Tottenham obviously looking for a marauding player who is going to make, you know, penetrating runs into the opposition third and the final third, but also making forward passes. So you're looking for somebody who's got good forward passing accuracy, and that kind of thing. Makes a lot of passes in the final third, accurate ones at that. So that's what you're kind of looking for there. And I don't think Rice scores that highly in that regard. Certainly not at the moment. I think he's more of a defensive player because I think he originally played in centre half, didn't he?
Yeah,
Declan Rice. So. Yeah. Yeah, but interesting, definitely interesting in terms of his contract situation and being homegrown. So I wouldn't rule him out.
And with Wenyama's future up in the air,
there
is a possible step there. Obviously, it depends as well. The other thing is, even in that position, is how highly they rate Skip or you know when Luke Amos comes back. Good
point. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Skip obviously he's got a chance now. The thing for these young players is they need the chance, and the chance can come. Either because it's the manager forces the chance by moving other players to the bench and giving them a chance, or the chance can come because of a set of circumstances. It can come spontaneously. So the chance there now, it would have been there for Amos had he not suffered the serious injury that he did. And the chance is now there for Skip to prove himself. So it's certainly worth keeping an eye on Skip, and I would expect him to play a few more games over the next few weeks. So it'd be worth keeping an eye on how he does, because you know if he does very, very well, if he's able to move up to the level that's required very quickly, and some players can do that, you know, some players can move up a few rings on the ladder very quickly when they're playing games, especially when they're playing first team games and they're thrust into that level. If he takes to it well, then it might affect Spurs' thinking a bit. You know, the thing about transfer plans is they're not. Especially in January, they're not rigid in that sense. They're kind of an organic thing, you know, that you need to keep constantly talking about and assessing and what have you as the weeks go by and players play or players get injured or what have you. Because Skip's certainly got a chance to put himself into the manager's thinking over the next few weeks.
Lol, I can't thank you ever so much. I know you've answered so many questions this evening. As always, a pleasure to have you back on the show. I mean, I hope you've enjoyed as much as you're going to give our listeners enjoyment, knowing just some of the ins and the outs, what's happening at Tottenham.
Yeah, no problem, mate. No, enjoyed it as much as I have done before. So, yeah, I look forward to the next one. And you know, hopefully there's some stuff to report on and talk about during January and give fans a bit of excitement through the transfer window. I'm sure there might be a few rumblings here and there that we can talk about.
Fingers crossed. Well, thank you so much and have a lovely Christmas and a healthy and happy new year.
And you, happy new year and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Thank you very much. Thanks again, Lyle. Much appreciated.
Cheers, all the best.
Cheers, thank you. Guys, I just want to say on behalf of everyone at The Last One on Spurs, from the whole team, I want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. I hope you're all enjoying your turkey. Hope you're enjoying opening your presents and pulling the crackers. I just want to say, in terms of the show this season, we've made incredible strides, which all you guys have been a part of. And as we sit here recording the show, we are in the top 20 in the UK of podcast sports shows, which is just simply remarkable. And it is down to all you listeners out there that get in touch with us every single week. So again, I just want to acknowledge how, you know, for us, it's such a big thing to have you guys to get in touch with the show every single week. All those listener questions, all those calls on Love Sport. I cannot thank you enough from the bottom of my heart from all the support you've given us right from the very start. We've had listeners that have been listening to us on different platforms over the last couple of years, and we're delighted to be able to bring you The Last One on Spurs every single week, and also in connection with Love Sport as well, where we love doing the shows over there. So just on behalf of myself, again, I want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. We've got so many Last One on Spurs shows coming your way very, very soon. I hope you've enjoyed this one. And I'm going to pass over to Jason McGovern, who's also got a few words for you lovely lot.
Absolutely, Rick. Just wish all our listeners a really Merry Christmas. It's been a fantastic start to Christmas with stuffing them bastards out the Carabao Cup. Looking forward to a semi-final with Chelsea. But as I say, enjoy the turkey on Christmas Day, because there was plenty of turkeys at the Emirates. Cheers, boys.
Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.